Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Hello and welcome to the Bike Radar podcast, brought to you from the team behind Cycling Plus, MBUK and BikeRadar.com.
Welcome to the Bike Radar podcast. My name is George Scott, Editor-in-Chief of Bike Radar, and today we have another one of our Meets episodes, where we chat to one of the leading riders, designers and personalities in cycling. I'm very fortunate today to be joined by Alistair Brownie, the 2012 and 2016 Men's Olympic Triathlon Champion. Alistair, welcome to the Bike Radar podcast.
Hiya, thanks very much for having me.
No problem. Well, Alistair, you know, you are someone who may be more used to gracing the pages of our sister title, 220 Triathlon Magazine, rather than Bike Radar, but I've been really keen to speak to you as you're someone who's recently thrown yourself into the world of gravel racing, riding the Badlands event in Spain, which we'll come on to, and also the King's Cup in Britain, to name a couple of events. So I think just to get us started, you know, can you kind of give us a bit of background? We know you, of course, as Alistair Brownie, the Olympic champion triathlete, but what's inspired your move to gravel and gravel racing?
Well, in lots of ways, this year has been a disaster. It's been the worst year of my career. I got an ankle injury in March, ended up having operation on it in June, and I've been recovering from it since. It's been really, really tough. And at some point in, I think, September, I thought, well, do you know what? Look at this as a positive. It gives me a chance to do things I don't normally get to do. And I've been a sports person most of my life. You know, started riding bikes when I was young and doing some bike racing when I think I was like 8 or 9 years old and stuff, as well as obviously swimming, cycling, running and triathlon. And so I always had an idea of all these kind of things that I'd like to do. And I thought, well, this gives me the chance to do some other stuff I don't normally get to do. Let's give it a go. And so I kind of chatted to a few people, a few friends, and thought, you know, I kind of want to do something gravel type of racing. What do you suggest? And got a few suggestions. And one of them was Badlands, which I think at the time was only like 10 days away. And so I went and looked it up and thought, oh, wow, that looks a bit of an effort, a bit outside my comfort zone, but decided to give it a go.
Yeah, we'll come on to that race in a second. But that ankle injury you've had, I imagine, and I'm guessing here, but is that something that stopped you running but didn't stop you riding a bike?
Well, yeah, well, it stopped me running for pretty much all of the year, but it actually didn't stop me riding for most of that time. And I mean, apart from maybe 3 weeks or something around the operation itself, maybe a bit longer, it hasn't stopped me riding. And so obviously I like to keep fit, like to keep active, like to keep outdoors. And so I've been, doing probably more cycling in lots of ways than I would do normally.
Well, I mean, we'll come on to this. It'd be good to get your kind of thoughts around kind of how you started in cycling and obviously kind of bolted that onto swimming and running to become the triathlete you are. But, you know, I think just to kind of open with the Badlands race, which is, I think I'm right in saying, 750 kilometres, around 15,000 metres of climbing in southern Spain, and you finished seventh off the back of 10 days preparation in 57 hours. I mean, clearly you're someone who has world-class endurance as a triathlete, but in Olympic distance triathlon, more used to racing over 40 kilometres on the bike and not 750 kilometres. So what was it like to race and compete, albeit in a very different event, over that kind of distance?
It was very different. I mean, obvious, something I didn't really give enough respect to at the time was the big thing with those races is sleeping and sleep deprivation. But yeah, the first, I think 150K or something was great. I really enjoyed it. I was in a group of the first few guys. And then I started hitting puncture territory and got some, got loads of punctures after my tubeless system. I think I hit a nail and it went straight through my tire twice. And probably everyone knows here, once you tubeless tire is down, you're having a bit of a problem, but after seven inner tube failures in my tubeless tire, I eventually managed to mend my tubeless by borrowing some sealant and a special type of canister head, and also gluing stuff to the inside of my tire and getting that going again. So then once I was going, it was great. You're following, so there's no navigation. You're following it on my Wahoo head unit, as it were. It's a commute route. And you just go 700 odd kilometers into the distance. And the thing with Badlands is, it's the distance, but also so much of it's slow going. It's kind of sandy, and it's the elevation meters. It said on the thing that it was 15,000, which means there's a 1,000 obviously up and down about every 50 kilometers. So if you think of that, you're basically always climbing at 5% or going downhill. And it actually turned out there was 16,000 meters, which was much to my dismay on the last few hours when I didn't know I had another 1,000 meters to climb than the route manual said. Heat, mountains, rough terrain, even altitude. We spent a lot of time riding above 2,000 meters and punctures. What did I kind of learn? I think water and salt were super important to me after 8 or 9 or 10 hours in. Food amazingly became less important. I think I just got to the kind of steady state of burning fat relatively and not needing like too much carbohydrates, but I needed a lot of water and I needed a lot of salt in a heat. Sleep. I mean, don't always sleep that well, but managed to sleep on the side of the road for 5 hours at night. The guys who were racing in front of me didn't sleep at all. I think the guy that won stopped for an hour in total in the 47 or 8 hours he took to do it, which is just incredible if you think of all those hours in the saddle. So, yeah, I think I left in equal measure with a love of that kind of event. There is something weirdly special about cycling through the night and seeing amazing countryside and environments that, you know, I've never seen before and probably won't see otherwise in the south of Spain. And been super impressed by some of those guys who are doing it for 2 days straight bike riding. Can't help but be impressed by that.
I mean, I suppose in some ways you have decades or more than a decade as an elite athlete kind of supporting you in terms of kind of fitness and endurance and preparation and mentality, but things like sleep deprivation and fending for yourself in terms of food and water and hydration, you just can't prepare for that unless you are experienced in that type of event and that type of race.
I think so, yeah. It's like so many of these things, you really believe you can prepare for it. Bit like doing Ironman as well, you think, how hard can it be? Like, it's cycling really, or as long as I eat enough and go at the right pace, I can kind of keep going. But yeah, I think it is, when races are that long and that difficult, like Badlands and the other kind of big endurance bike packing events, it's also as much about the challenges you face along the way. Obviously the physical challenges, the mental challenges, but I guess the technical challenges as well of how to mend a puncture quickly, how to deal with it when you need to deal with it. And because things are just going to go wrong when you're riding for 50 hours across awful sandy terrain, things on your bike are probably going to go wrong.
I mean, you posted a video of your setup for that race beforehand. I recommend our listeners check it out. It's on your YouTube channel, Brownie TV. But can you talk us through some of the tech highlights that you took to the race?
Yeah, well, I was using the new Scott adventure bike, gravel bike it's called, which awesome frame, the SRAM Explorer group set with a pair of Zip 303 wheels, Syncross saddle, Scott shoes. I had some restrap bags. I had a frame bag and a small bag on the saddle bag and handlebar bag. And I tried to travel light. I think I didn't travel as light as some other people. I took a very simple half sleeping bag and four blanket with me to sleep in and a down jacket, a spare pair of bib shorts and a spare pair of socks. And I think that was it for clothing. Had quite a lot of food with me, OT bars and kind of trail mix stuff. And I had three bottles with me, which, because there was points I was particularly worried about that I thought would be kind of 5 or 6 hours that I'd be hitting in the middle of the day through the Garafi desert. where I wouldn't be able to get water. So I was quite worried about water. And I actually found someone drinking in like a Spanish roundabout fountain. They were so desperate for water. So it was quite hardcore. What else did I? Oh, I had some really great exposure lights and really good advice I got. And I'd say to everyone else, invest in good lights, because that makes all the difference of being able to cycle at night, like pleasantly, rather than peering into the darkness and trying to work out what your little LED is illuminating. So that made a big difference. Obviously, my phone, I had a battery pack, two Wahoo head units, and I actually only use one of them. But if you can't tell where you're going, if you can't navigate, you're obviously in big trouble. So I thought it was good to have a backup. And yeah, backup, I had a few tubes, patches, obviously pump, and things like spare links and spare brake pads and that kind of thing, and tools. That is the challenge. It's knowing exactly what to take, and you're never going to need everything that you need. You're never going to be able to take everything that you need. And stops along the way for water and food. I stopped at a variety of garages, little cafes, restaurants, stopped at some roadside, motorway restaurant, and beach bars and all sorts, to be honest. I think that was everything. I had a spare bladder on my back. So I had a Terex kind of bladder backpack with a bladder in it that I think could hold up to 3 liters. So I just had that, ready in case I needed it.
I mean, I think with any bikepacking trip, but particularly a kind of bikepacking or ultra endurance race, there's always a balance to be struck between what you need for comfort and then what you need to be minimal and, you know, stay lightweight. Do you feel you kind of roughly got that kind of balance right?
I hope so. But like you said, it's really difficult to get it right. I didn't have what I needed to have. I could have done with some more canisters. I could have done with some spare sealant, and I could have done with a spare tire, to be honest. Who knows, what you're supposed to take. You can't take a spare rim with you, can you?
No. And it's you prepare for the unexpected, but you have to kind of have a bit of luck along the way, I suppose, and kind of rely on a bit of luck. Just on the group set with the new SRAM component. So I think you had a 42 tooth chainring, and there was a lot of climb in there, and it was a 1x setup. Did you feel you kind of got the gear in about right?
Yeah, so I had a 42/10/46, I think. I'd kind of looked at it. That gives you a massive range. And I think it probably was about right. I mean, I never really got to the point. By the time you're not riding that, I decided I was walking anyway. So, but I think on the whole, it's always nice. It probably would have been nicer to have another gear. I was actually worried about, with obviously the 1x, of falling into the gaps of the big jumps in the cassette. And I never had that problem at all. Didn't feel ever that I could have done with another gear, which is quite remarkable, really, when some of the climbs are epic. I can't quite describe. You just go uphill. You think you've done all the mountains, and then you're just going up a gravel track that goes up for 1,000+ meters. You know, I must have done 10,000 meter climb. Well, obviously 15,000 meters of climbing, but you know, there was a lot of climbs that were big, like you'd call them big, like coal climbs there, right down to sea level and then right back up to, pine forest in the mountains. There's a lot of, I can't say a lot of big climbing as well as kind of the little climbs along the way. I was happy with that. I think 1x is good. It's just less to go wrong, which I think is important in that kind of race, and worked really well. I had a spare SRAM battery as well, which I thought was important, and spare watch batteries, because one of my levers managed to run out of power. I think I got no idea how. I think maybe when I'd like lent it against something, was that when I was sleeping, I might have lent it and it ran out of power. But that shows you the kind of thing. You know, I think I changed one other lever battery in my entire life. Otherwise, you know, they don't go very often. And I had to change one halfway up a mountain somewhere.
Yeah, that's a good pro tip. Take a watch battery, because I think, you know, anyone that's used SRAM Axis or Di2, the derailleurs need recharging kind of fairly often, but that's fine. You can do it at home and you know roughly what you're going to get from them, but you don't quite know what you're going to get out of the levers. But, you know, it's a couple of years use. But yeah, unlucky to kind of have it fail in the mountains, but then equally good preparation to have the battery with you. I mean, sometimes when we kind of speak to athletes about their tech setup and, you know, some riders and some athletes just aren't into it. They kind of get what they're given and they use it and it's fine and it's kind of the day job. But you sound like someone who kind of understands and kind of enjoys the details. Would you kind of call yourself a bike nerd, and do you kind of enjoy fine-tuning the spec and understanding what equipment you're using?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I do love bikes. I've spent a long time, a lifetime riding them, and obviously they're very important. And I think in Olympic distance racing triathlon, yeah, bikes are super important. I think as you move to long distance, former triathlon, Ironman, obviously the bike is 112 miles long. It's a time trial bike. It's non-drafting. And the bike becomes really important. You know, not that it's not important, but even more important. And so looking at all those fine details that can give you a small advantage over 112 miles, you know, obviously aerodynamics, but smoothness, chain friction, rolling resistance, all those kind of things. And you do all this training for a race and you don't want your bike to go wrong. So that definitely kind of forces you to be really, really meticulous with your preparation of the bike. And yeah, I guess similar. I took a similar approach to that gravel event. I knew it'd be pushing the kind of bike right to its limits, and I didn't want the bike to let me down. So I did everything I could to try and prove that. The one thing that I learned, you might be able to call me ignorant for this, but I never knew it happened, is that my tire sealant actually congealed. New tire sealant congealed to the inside of my tire, and I think it was the heat, because it was like 45 degrees in this desert, and I never knew that could happen. So, but now I do, and I googled it, and apparently certain sealant is better than other sealant in the heat, and some people even mix coolant with their sealant. That's new to me.
looking after a car in the middle of summer. I didn't know that. Firstly because don't have 45 degree weather in Bristol, but also I might be the editor of the site, but I'm kind of fairly technically ignorant, and we have our tech writers and testers and reviewers who are much better kind of, or have their finger on the pulse when it comes to that kind of thing. So I can't say I'm going to be entering bad lines anytime soon, but if I do, then I'll watch out for that. So you went from there to a 750 kilometer race in Spain, and then also rode the British National Gravel Championships, unofficial gravel championships in Norfolk with the King's Cup, finishing second on the day, but was the first Brit across the line to become the first national gravel champion. But it was a very different race format. I think it was three laps of a course and around 70 kilometers. So, I mean, how was that experience, I suppose, effectively as a bunch race, but also over a shorter distance?
Yeah, it was very different. And it was only like 10 days, I think, after I finished Badlands. And I had actually done another event in between. I went to Scotland to do an event called Gravelfoil in Aberfoyle, which was great as well, enduro format. And then down to Suffolk for the King's Cup. It was really great event. Had a really nice feel about it. People camping in the field and racing. I think it's a really good format of racing, you know, like a kind of 2 hour race. I'd say it was about 50% on gravel trails and 50% on single track. And it made for really great racing, like fast rolling along on the gravel section, and then obviously going hard and like pushing it on and on around the technical bits to try and split it up. And I really, really enjoyed it. It was great. I mean, I came second in the race. I definitely would have come third if it wasn't for a little crash in front of me and coming up to the finish line. And then the guy that won, he was a Kiwi, so it meant I was first Brit across the line. So that was good.
I mean, in terms of your setup, you know, you clearly wouldn't have had any all the extras with you in terms of mechanical spares and food and hydration, but yeah, broadly speaking, was your bike in a fairly similar setup to Badlands?
I used exactly the same bike. I used exactly the same tyres. I might have actually just gone a bit wider, but I can't remember. I should actually for Badlands, I was using Schwabel G1Rs, like the race version of the G1s. And they're just a great all-round gravel tyre. And yeah, apart from that, everything was the same. I did even keep the same gearing. I thought that would give me the range. I mean, I could have obviously had a smaller cassette on it to give me less range because you definitely didn't need it and it was fast. It was about, yeah, it's 70K and took 2 hours. So average speed of 35K an hour and you're going faster than that on the fast bits, obviously. So yeah, I mean, maybe it would have been better to have a big, slightly bigger range there, but the bike was absolutely fine.
I mean, gravel riding generally is something that's seen a big, big boom in cycling over the last few years, really popular with our readers on Bike Radar. And it's often described as a bit of an antidote to road riding, you know, less structured, less rules, more friendly, can get away from roads and from traffic. I mean, what's it been like for you as someone who's competed at the very top end of elite sport for more than a decade?
The combination of using it in training and to kind of explore, and that's been fantastic. I've ridden the same roads in Yorkshire for all that time, and so actually to go out and ride a gravel bike where, you know, it's exactly the same pretty much set up as your road bike, you're riding along and then you can jump on a track out in the middle of the Yorkshire Dales that I've never been on before. So obviously that kind of exploration and I've really loved, and that's been really cool. And at the same time, it's been fantastic opportunity to do the racing as well, which, yeah, it kind of both fit a real different feel. Obviously stood on the start line for 750K race is very different to being on the start line for a much shorter race or a triathlon or anything else. So I enjoyed that. I enjoy doing different things. I've got a whole list of other events I want to do as I kind of do less professional triathlon.
What are the kind of highlights on that list from a kind of cycling perspective?
Well, I definitely like to, I feel like the gravel racing, I mean, I know there's going to be a world championships in it next year, but also I'd really like to have a go at the big kind of American races like Dirty Kanzer and the Belgian Waffle Rides. I think I'd really like to do that next year. It feels like it's progressing kind of quickly. They look really cool routes and experience. So yeah, I think that's pretty much high on the list. And then further into the future, I'd like to do more. I'd definitely like to do more bikepacking, adventure racing. The big stuff like the Silk Road and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, there is definitely a trend for world tour pros on the road to leave that behind and start racing gravel professionally, effectively. Or someone like Lachlan Morton, who rides for EF, you know, continuing to ride grand tours, but also doing their alternative calendar and the alternative Tour de France that he did this year. And I think Lauren Tendam as well has started riding gravel recently. I mean, you kind of mentioned this at the start, but you know, with the year that you've had and the really challenging year that you've had, has it kind of given you, as you said, a kind of opportunity to focus on something new? Obviously, keep your fitness and your training and your on bike work ticking over, and also a chance to kind of assess what's next for you.
It's definitely given me a chance to do something else, which has been really important. I think I would have been really struggling if I hadn't being able to have some kind of competitive outlet in all this time, because it has been really tough. And, I've been used to doing some kind of racing and have a goal to aim for so long. And so to not have that has been tough, and to do that in cycling has been great. I guess it's definitely opened my eyes to what's out there. I kind of more probably, came from a world of, like, running adventure, even though I was kind of brought up in the going out with local cycling clubs, cycling, like local cycling community, going for long Sunday rides and cafe stops and like really long 100-mile rides into the Dales. So I kind of brought up with that philosophy of exploration, but Also running and fell running and the kind of northern British Yorkshire and Cumbrian fell running scene and that exploration. So I guess it's kind of always been there. And then I must admit, I really didn't know much about the whole bikepacking world. And then within a few days of being told about Badlands, I went from, that's absolutely ridiculous, who would want to ride for 750k in one go, to, yeah, great, let's give it a go and see how it is. So yeah, now I've like you say, now my eyes have been opened. Yeah, there's a whole world of that out there that I'd like to give a go.
I mean, have you done any kind of bikepacking for fun? Just, you know, with yourself or with friends?
I've done quite a lot of bikepacking for fun over the years. Mostly just with friends and going off, starting from home and heading north into the Dales or over to the coast and up to the Lake District and that kind of thing. Always bikepacked like credit card toured, so stayed in hotels and friends' houses and stuff. Never slept rough, but yeah, I've really enjoyed that. I mean, I love exploring, always at the end of the kind of season, just out there and kind of as a holiday.
I mean, I was going to ask kind of how you got into cycling in the first place, and you kind of spoke about it a bit then, but you've always been very kind of, my impression anyway, it kind of embedded in the cycling scene in Yorkshire. You know, there's kind of countless, numerous kind of world-class riders there, you know, more than any part of the UK. And I think, you know, the Leeds chain gang you're a regular on. So has that kind of community always been an important part of your kind of training and racing?
Yeah, it's been a very important part of my training and racing. Yeah, definitely. I think I first went on the Leeds chain gang as a 14-year-old. So that's 2002, so nearly 20 years ago. Like the chain gang, the local groups, like local people, you know, a bit of racing, and just friends and people to ride with. That's been a massive part of my career. Groups of people to get you out of the door on the day that you're, you know, the days where it's raining and you need people to do a long ride with them. It's fantastic. And yeah, Leeds is a brilliant area to be part of that.
I mean, are you still kind of finding new places to ride and explore in your local area, or have you got every route mapped out?
I don't really find new places anymore unless I go a long way. Even probably, you know, when I started doing kind of a bit more off-road and gravel type riding a few years ago, I was starting to find new tracks that would like link up roads and stuff. But I definitely, you know, I kind of knew the lay of the land and the road. I did do a bit of stuff, maybe two rides really for Badlands, especially one really long one. Went right out to the west coast one day and came back, and I did another one right up into Yorkshire and did loads of off-road. Yeah. Oh that one was probably linking up kind of everything I kind of know in one go. But that being out for like 15 hours is obviously it's a relatively new experience for me doing some of those routes.
You managed to kind of twist your brother's arm into any kind of epic bikepacking rides?
Not yet. But yeah, I'm hoping he'll join me soon.
And I think, completely different to bikepacking and gravel racing, but another area that's seen a lot of growth for us in the last couple of years is kind of virtual racing and Zwift and all the indoor cycling apps. Am I also right in saying that you've done some Zwift racing?
Yeah, I've done quite a bit of Zwift racing, yeah. I've done some seriously, and I've done some... yeah, just for fun. Just as part of a training day and stuff. So, I have done quite a bit. I think Zwift has definitely transformed training indoors for me. I haven't always been the biggest fan of training on the turbo, but Zwift has actually made it not only kind of enjoy, like not terrible, but at times, yeah, I actually want to train on the turbo and go and do a session as a race, and that's great, obviously.
I think the gravel foil event, or the Duke's Weekender event you mentioned earlier, that was an enduro format, wasn't it, where there's a road hill climb and then a kind of gravel enduro, kind of multi-stage part of it as well. Have you ever been tempted to kind of throw yourself into the kind of hill climb scene that we've got in the UK? We just had the national championships at the weekend, I think, on Winnats Pass. Has that ever kind of tempted you, or could that be a future option for you?
Well, I've always seen it. Maybe at some point. It just looks like the worst sport ever. I struggle with kind of time trial format events anyway. I like racing. I like competitiveness. I like the kind of more one-on-one type thing. That's why I've never done really a lot of time trialing either. But yeah, never say never.
No, I mean, we got a few of the riders on our team here who, you know, love hill climb season, and we kind of regularly do a kind of YouTube diary series on hill climb events that they race. But I personally don't see the appeal, because it is kind of 4 or 5 minutes of very, very hard, very, very painful racing. And I think the racing that I've done previously has been kind of cyclocross, bunch racing to a degree, or criteriums or road racing, where you do have that competitive element. So yeah, I hear where you're coming from on that one. It's very painful and unpleasant. I think just kind of finally to kind of look ahead to, you know, this winter and next year, we kind of heading into November, you know, what's kind of on the cards for you over the next 6 months or so?
This winter, it feels like we are right in the winter now. And yeah, my ankle, it means that I'm kind of just starting to train properly now, which is a really good thing because it's been a really tough year. So I just want to get back to training properly and normally, and that'll be really good. I think also I'm looking forward to really focusing really only on long distance triathlon. So I've got a few things next year. There's actually two Ironman distance racing world championships, because they've been cancelled for the last few years. So there's one in May in Utah and the traditional one in October in Kona. Outside that, I've got a project to try and do an Ironman distance event in under 7 hours, which is going to happen sometime in the summer, which is really exciting as well, along with loads of other racing and hopefully some of those big American gravel races as well.
I mean, how is the, or kind of what does the transition look like for someone who has obviously won 2 Olympic gold medals in Olympic distance triathlon, moving to focusing more specifically on long distance triathlon? Is that a kind of a fairly natural progression, or, you know, is it very difficult for someone to do?
Well, in theory, it shouldn't be too difficult. It's still a kind of a long distance endurance event, but there is some big differences. You know, getting your nutrition right, for example, transition of the bike on from racing road style crit style racing to long distance time trialing effectively is obviously a big difference. So I think all those things, there's a change, but it's a new challenge. And I think I've been enjoying the challenge so far.
Well, we wish you all the best in your continued recovery from your injury and what comes next for you in terms of gravel racing, but more specifically long distance triathlon. We can leave it there. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Alistair. Thank you very much for joining us on the Bike Radar podcast.
Great. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening. Remember, you can subscribe to the Bike Radar podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And please do leave us a review. We always appreciate your feedback. That's it for now. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Bike Radar podcast. If you want any more information on what we've been talking about or more news and views on cycling, check out bikeradar.com.